You know, I think it's a blessing for these guys to not see the mountaintop and end like this. Because when you've been there and you've seen it, like, it's a lot more depressing. So for me, last year, we just won a Super Bowl. We didn't even have, you know, exit meetings or anything like that. We were celebrating, you know, parades and, you know, all of that stuff. And, you know, I think once you've experienced that and then you don't make it to the playoffs or you don't have the type of success that you want in the playoffs, like, it's tougher, I feel like. For 31 teams, 31 teams in the National Football League are going to feel like this.
It's Von Miller. If he stayed healthy, did he have a look at Defensive Player of the Year? Micah Parsons, Nick Bosa, and Chris Jones. He would have been, what, 14, 15 sacks? 16?
I mean, we were just looking at the Eagles, and was it Hassan Reddick had 16 sacks, and he didn't get nominated?
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe. I might lean no, but I wouldn't rule it out. We just also got Comeback Player of the Year finalists.
Okay.
Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Geno Smith.
Geno Smith wins
that. That's got to be Geno Smith.
Get out of here with Christian McCaffrey. He's always awesome. Oh, is he hurt? He was hurt last year.
Was it the whole year, though?
No. Okay.
Well, they missed five games last year. Barkley and McCaffrey, they played most of the year, didn't they?
Good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase. Sean McDermott, a finalist for Head Coach of the Year, along with four others. Kyle Shanahan, Nick Sirianni, Doug Peterson, and Brian Daboll. Those are your finalists for Coach of the Year. Do we get MVP soon?
I think we're going to get MVP soon, yeah. We're going to everything else. We got offensive, defensive, comeback, coach,
so
assistant coach.
It'll be Mahomes and Hurts. Is Allen's making the final three? Is Justin Jefferson making the final three?
I think Allen was second in the odds when the season ended. And remember, it's a regular season award. So the voting would have concluded 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh. So he could be a finalist.
He could be a finalist.
All right.
He's not going to win it. Mahomes is going to win it. But
Keep you updated on that. I'll tell a quick story before we get back to your calls.
Is this the scare?
This is the scare.
Okay.
This is the scare. So a little fun story for me to tell everybody. So last night, my wife is out, and I'm watching the twins, both kids. And before bed, it's, you know, rascal time. We're going to play. We're going to do stuff. They're going to run around. They're going to do everything. And my son, Knox, he's just like any kid that's just about two. He swings a hockey stick. He hits things in the house. He throws balls. And when he throws it, like, he'll pick up a golf ball and throw it and say, "I throw." And like, that's what he does. Yeah.
Like a real golf ball.
Yeah, like an actual golf ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the house, there are some ping pong balls. There are wiffle golf balls. There are balls that you'd have, like, in a ball pit. Those are all fine to throw.
Yeah.
We generally try to keep the golf balls away because
smart.
You could do some damage. Throw.
Could he throw it hard enough to break a window?
Yes, he could. And I've thought several times, got to make sure every time I see a ball that could break something, I got to get that thing out of sight.
Because he's going to...
Or up on a shelf because... In a living room,
he's looking to rip it.
There's a television, and like,
oh yeah,
that'd be way worse than a window. Is if I just walk into the living room and I hear him say, "I throw,"
and then just crash.
So sure enough, last night, you know, I'm watching, I'm playing zone defense. It's 1-on-2 here.
Uh-huh.
I'm watching the two of them, and there's a little wooden ball that is like the size of a toddler's hand. It's heavy. It's thick. If I threw this ball, it would hurt.
What is this from?
It's a wooden ball? It's like a little play set. You know, when there's toddler toys, you drop the ball in a hole and slide it here, and it makes noise and knocks around, like wooden toddler toys.
Okay.
And last night, you know, I'm in the room with him, and I see him, and he's got the wooden ball, and he is roared back, and he's ready, and the target in his sights is the television.
Oh, no.
And
is he throwing up at the television here?
It's not mounted on a wall.
Like, what are the odds he's actually hitting the TV if he throws
100%.
He's hitting it.
Yeah, he can throw.
Yeah.
And he's roared back, and I've caught him before, roared back on the television. This time, as I see it happening, you can picture everything in slow motion.
Uh-huh.
My head turns, I see him, and it's, and I try to get to him. And he, like Josh Allen with a pass rush, he got the throw off.
Oh, wow.
He got the throw off. And this Henry...
Pressure bearing down on him. The right tackle got beat.
Yeah. He stood in, and he stood, and he made that throw. And
like Allen against the Jaguars in his rookie season.
Yep. He got that throw off. And that ball hit the TV.
Oh, no. But wait, you're saying this was a scare
so
that didn't end?
My no immediately turned into, oh, my God. And I go and I check. I'm like, TV's fine. Somehow. I don't know if it hit like the bottom lip and bounced off the.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like a direct hit, like not in the middle of the screen?
I consider it a miracle that that I don't have to come in today. Sal tells a story a couple months ago. His son like was playing and the Wii controller slipped out and the TV broke. And like, and I felt, you know, so I was talking about that moment and all that. And, you know, what like the teachable moment. He's too young to have a teachable moment other than, dear God, what are you doing?
Right.
So, yeah, a full. I mean, I swear, I think it hit that television hard. And if that had happened, I mean, I'm sure that I'm just months, weeks, days away from these children able to destroy more things in the house.
Sure. Well, I mean, if they're already at the TV, I mean, there's not much higher places to go than that.
Yeah. I mean, I've been living a life of dogs destroying things, and that's kind of normal. And now, I mean,
you just got rambunctious toddlers just ripping
just
balls at TVs.
Right. And so proud of this, of these throws. We play catch, we play hockey.
He's got a little quarterback future.
Oh, yeah, like mini sticks, all the stuff. All the stuff you play when you're a kid. He's getting into all this stuff. And, man, I thought during that Sabres game, I thought like, uh-oh, it's bad. Anyway, so there's my story. I would have probably called in. I'd have been so upset. Because it's kind of thing you know, this could happen. You got to keep an eye out for this. Make sure he doesn't throw a ball into the television. And, you know, he broke contain and he got the throw off.
Yeah. He's always, feels like, is he always looking to break contain? Is this like a constant, like daily occurrence?
There is no contain. Yeah. They live outside of contain, these two. They run around nonstop.
Wow.
Joe and Brant. Joe, good morning. You're on WGR.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
All right. I've been listening for like a couple days when I've had chances to. And no one's really touched on this, and it's kind of been bothering me personally watching the team as a fan. I saw that we got pushed around pretty well on the field. And no one's really questioned the training and conditioning of the players after all the injuries. Is there an off-season workout program? Are these guys required to lift weights and professionally train? I mean, I feel that that's where they failed.
McDermott. On the injury front, he did bring up that a lot of their defensive linemen had calf injuries, and it's something that they would look into. Yes, they have an off-season training program. Yes, they lift weights. Yes, they got pushed off the ball and pushed around against Cincinnati. But I assure you that, yes, the football team does lift weights.
Yes. Like, they have a top-of-the-line weight room and training facility.
It is one thing that happens in football. If you get out schemed up and down the field, it's going to look like you're soft. It's the way that it works. It's why coaches are in love with running the football. You get a bunch of perfect blocks, even if you are not the bigger, stronger team. Sometimes it requires that, but if it's schemed up perfectly, or if you out scheme your opponent, you walk all over them. I mean, technique, run fits, these are is there somebody in the hole where he's supposed to be? Or did he, you know, if there's a linebacker that's supposed to fill this gap and he's not there because he's late, all of a sudden all your defensive linemen are they're not strong enough. They didn't lift weights. In reality, they all did their job. It was this guy's job to fill that hole. He didn't.
Right. Or like point to the play where Tremaine Edmonds gets like thrown by a tackle. Like Edmonds got picked up by the left tackle of the Bengals and just got thrown backwards. Could that have just been the defensive end went to the wrong gap? Like a mental mistake before it, and now my linebacker's going up against someone that's got 90 pounds on him, and it looks like I'm soft, even though the guy should have never been in that position in the first place.
And, I mean, it's all about leverage and technique. On that Edmonds play where he's getting blown up by that tackle, you have one false step, and guess what? You're going for a ride.
Yeah.
It's not a constant who's the stronger man every microsecond of the moment, who wins it in one moment, and then it's over and he's going to ride you into the ground.
Right.
I mean, a pancake block is who loses in a moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But on the injury front and the training, they have had tremendous success and results with their training and with their injuries for like 3.5-4 years. This year it did not go that way, and the head coach did indeed say he would look at it. Lou, who is driving. What's up, Lou?
Hey, good morning. You know, I looked at Frazier's scheme, and if you notice, when we were rushing the passer, all four of our defensive linemen were going towards the middle of the O-line. And then when we blitzed, we were Cincinnati's best blocker because they're sending the linebackers through the same gap as the defensive tackles, and they're just bouncing off of each other. And then I see Edmonds, the tight end, crosses his face. Instead of going with the tight end, he goes to the receiver in that zone, and Jackson's right behind the receiver. And that's when Hurst got wide open for, I think it was about 20 yards.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what they schemed up, but McDermott, he looks at the game plan. He approves them all. So they got to change something. We had no stunts. We didn't run any stunts. Nothing. Cincinnati's line looked like a Greek phalanx. No one could move anywhere.
What?
Brutal.
I don't know how many stunts they ran. I noticed them run at least a couple, and they were not working, which might even be more of a criticism of the talent on that defensive line. I don't know. There could be something schematically that's wrong there for why they didn't get pressure on Burrow. I think it's pretty easy to see, though. They have four defensive linemen that started on Sunday that do not win one-on-one matchups.
And on more than half his
dropbacks,
Burrow got the ball too quick.
They were double-teaming Oliver all day.
Okay, then why Rousseau, Basham, and Tim Settle? Why weren't they getting through?
That's my point. What did they do? Nothing.
But
they
were
one-on-one with these guys and couldn't beat them.
But I don't know that I put that on Frazier. I put that on these were guys that they invested in that have not proven to be great pass rushers.
I'd like to thank you, Lou, for having me look up Greek phalanx. He said the offensive line was like a Greek phalanx.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, like, I'm not sure I know what that is. And now that I've looked it up, I did know what that was. You know what a Greek phalanx is?
I do not know what this is, no.
It is, it's like this. I'll show you the picture. It's like a densely packed set of warriors forming a line. So it's a very good term to use for how their offensive line looked because,
yeah,
indeed they did. One other thing that was pointed out many, many times. Whatever, many, many times. Listen to me. I saw it on Twitter is what I'm trying to say. Put it on many.
What would we do without Twitter?
I know, right? The Bengals offense used motion to get the Bills into looks that they liked. Several times the motion would go and the backer would move here and then watch where they run to or watch what they identify. They had Jamar Chase doing one of those motion to the backfield, swing around. You're worried about him on a swing pass, ends up being a run play. Like, some point, maybe tonight, maybe today, I'll look for like motion splits. How often did the Bills use motion?
Middle of the season, I remember looking that up, and they were not as high as they were last year. Like under Daboll, they did a lot of it. And again, that was like middle of the season. I remember looking that up and thinking, okay, they're like middle of the pack or even below average.
And this happens, this happens to a lot of play callers. Sean McVay was a genius briefly, and then teams caught up to him and it didn't go as well.
Yep.
And then talent fell apart for them too. But one of the things McVay said was he noticed teams catching up to him. Maybe he had some bad, lazy tendencies. He took some of the motion out of his offense, had to put it back in. Motion, a lot of the things you can dress up your offense, and I'm not so sure how much the Bills use that this year. We'll effort that. Nick and Elma. Nick.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, first, want to get on these a lot of these Dorsey apologists I'm hearing here. At Marino, I forget if it's Jim or Joe, but he said he replicated Brian Daboll, and I saw nothing of the sort. Like, he had Brian Dable's blueprint, and he still failed. Josh Allen had a career high in rushing attempts. That should be decreasing, not increasing. And the only touchdown drive we had against Cincinnati had like 3 Allen sticks, including the touchdown. I don't want our $250 million quarterback piling into 300-pound linemen to get a touchdown. That's not good offense.
Yeah. Thanks, Nick. This is my biggest beef with the offense, too. That, like, I Josh Allen running is not always a bad idea. Running out on the edge and jumping over Tre'Davious Ward, love it. Running out on the edge and he's jumped over like 5 Chiefs by now.
Mm-hmm.
Getting out into space, making a linebacker miss and taking on a defensive back, I'm into it. The occasional quarterback sneak when you need it, I'm into it. The second down play on their only touchdown drive was, hey, Josh, run into defensive linemen with all you've got. And yeah. I just, to me, those plays, the number of times that they ran Allen in, not even like the, you know, the pulling linemen where there's all this room and you are outnumbering and it's going to be block here, block there. Allen's into space. He's going to make the safety miss or he's going to take the safety on. In those spots, sure. When you're just using him like a fullback, I watch that and I think, I don't think you have any answers. I don't think you have any good ideas.
Yeah.
I hate those plays. And they worked. Like, that's the other thing. It got him down to the one, and they snuck it in from there. So I end up being a little bit torn because I want you to do what works. I want you to get in the end zone. But if I'm the owner of the team or the GM of the team, I might say, like, you really don't have anything better? You can't draw up a jet sweep, a swing pass, anything.
They didn't run a single trick play all year.
Not the whole year.
Not one.
Not the whole year.
Dable would do, what, 5 or 6?
Yep.
Every big game they played, like on prime time, they'd have something.
They'd have something ready.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that I want the whole offense made out of trick plays. I'm not saying I need 5, 3, 6. I don't know. But the whole year, yeah, sure. To me, that's a sign about not quite having. I mean, you said Dorsey apologist. Like, on Dorsey, I don't need him to be fired. I do think a lot of the language around why he has to stay is the stuff you say about any coach. Well, it's important. He got an endorsement from his players, from Allen. Allen said good things. Like, yeah, I watched Phil Housley get a second year after finishing in dead last, and his players said, you know, it wasn't the coach's fault. Like, Kruger, same thing.
Yeah.
Like, players endorse coaches, and if they're not good enough, because they have relationships. Not to say Ken Dorsey is, you know, like Phil Housley, but the point is just...
it's a tough one.
No, well, but the point
is... It's the right point, though.
Saying that he's endorsed by the players, that doesn't actually mean much. I mean, a lot of guys are.
Right.
All right, we'll get a break in. More of your phone calls on the other side. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Coach of the Year, Sean McDermott, is a finalist for Coach of the Year. We're still waiting for the MVP, if in fact that does come out today. Got a lot of the other NFL awards finalists being mentioned. So far, only McDermott is on the list. Jeremy White, Sneaky Joe DiBiase here on WGR.
Well, I got cleared. I got cleared. So next game, I was going to be able to go out there and play. This is the most unique season, obviously, I've ever been a part of. Just, you know, working my way back to just be a part of this team and go out there and try to help in any way I could. And then to come, you know, get into the playoffs and, like I told you guys, struggling for a little bit after surgery and then, you know, getting some good news from the doctor about my recovery and, you know, getting to the point where I finally got to last week to get cleared late in the week. And know that, you know, we have the possibility to win this game. I'm out there.
Micah Hyde said he was cleared to play but didn't get enough practice time and he would have played next week.
What might have been?
Would have been an incredible comeback.
Yes.
Neck injury that would have knocked him out.
What a year,
right?
For
next year, though.
Hey, how many games are you playing? The first one, the second one, and then the last two. That's what it really could have been.
Yeah.
Two games to start, two games to end if they've, you know, go on to win the Super Bowl and make it that far. It is wild. Like, one thing I'll say about, like, the press conference yesterday from Brandon Bean, asked about the gap between the Bills and Bengals.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really, you know, we're talking about all the things I think the Bills need and how they get better. I'm not really here to listen to any sort of gap.
Did you see Kevin? You mentioned Kevin Cole earlier on something else. Did you see his tweet on this? On Bean talking about a gap between the Bills and the Bengals. It is worth pointing out. Like, the odds are what they are, but there are odds out there for next year's Super Bowl, and the Bills are tied for the best odds, and the Bengals are fifth. So, like, there are those out there that think the Bengals won the game on that day.
Sure,
they were the better team on that day, but
I might want to wait 3 weeks. If they win the Super Bowl, they're going to move past the Bills. Right?
Yeah, they should. They should move past. The Chiefs and the Bills are the co-favorites. How could they not be if they beat the Bills once and on the road and then the Chiefs twice
right.
in the same season? Yeah, wouldn't they have to?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
It's almost weird, though, that they're not already there.
Well, the Bengals are somehow able to be awesome, and they're favored in Kansas City now.
Yeah, they're -1.5. And okay. that might go up. 89% of the money I saw this morning is on the Bengals. So could they be a 3-point favorite in Kansas City?
We'll see what happens.
On them, even if that line goes up even more?
Yeah. They're the Bills right now of last year. They're playing so well.
Yeah, they haven't lost since like week 8.
Yeah. Danielle in Orchard Park. Good morning, Danielle.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
Hi, I just want to talk about Leslie Frazier. I'm not disputing he's a great defensive coordinator, but my question is he enough? Do we have enough of an aggressive defense? When I look at 3 of the 4 teams that are left in the Super Bowl race here, especially Eagles and 49ers, I just see a lights-out, super aggressive defense. And when it comes to really good teams, I'm just not seeing that from Buffalo.
Yeah, Danielle, did you hear our conversation with Joe Marino from this morning? At 8?
I did not.
I would, well, if you can, I'll give you a quick recap on one of the things that he said about Frazier that I found interesting. You know, the Bills have had a defense of the last 5-6 years that has been excellent at betting you can't beat them consistently, right? Mm-hmm. Where they've got Tre'Davious White, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer back there, a rotating second cornerback. Their defensive line has been, before this year, good, not great. Their linebackers, you could make the case, are great. Milano and Edmonds, you've got whatever. The entire defense has been talented. And the Bills' philosophy is, we bet you can't consistently beat us 12 play drives and, in the process, keep up with our offense. And that has been a good bet.
Right.
And then what happened this year? Well, you lost Jordan Poyer for parts of the season, Micah Hyde for all of the season, basically. Tre'Davious White not in peak form. Your defensive line was, I'm in shambles, might be too much, but Von Miller, who's supposed to be out there, he's not available. Jordan Phillips can't raise his arm because he's got a torn rotator cuff. I've got Daquan Jones missing from that game as well.
Yeah.
Throughout the season, every player on the defense missed time. The corner two position wasn't as reliable as they probably wanted it to be. Like, if they got last year's personnel, I bet the defense is fine. But they relied on it, and cracks started to form. And there wasn't enough of an adjustment. The Bills don't really spend too much time, this is a little bit of Joe's take, taking something away. Instead of short passing game, go ahead and beat us with your short passing game.
Uh-huh.
Take away. Focus on something. And take away something that the other team does. And that they kind of don't do that. Their identity has been to just bet on themselves. You can't consistently beat us. And they've been right a lot about that.
Also, this is not going to be in line with, I think, anything the coach ever thinks. This head coach. But I will continue to approach this as, when your defense can be as good as you can make it. And when you play teams like the Chiefs and the Bengals, they are going to get their points. The Bills are, for 5 years, the best pass defense in football. When they play the Chiefs, they get their points. When they play the Bengals, now you can include that in, they get their points. But
I've felt that way too. Is that true of every team? When Lou Anarumo plays the Bills, what happened? They didn't get their points.
Mm-hmm.
When he plays the Chiefs, what happens? They don't get their points. He basically shut them out in the second half last season.
How likely am I think I'm able to replicate that, though? How special is what Cincinnati has right now for that? Because nobody else is doing that.
No, that's right. That's right. That most of the time, well, okay, how easy is that to replicate? The Jets have done it. The Jets play the Bills, and the Bills do not get their points.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills, I just think the Bills became a lot more defendable this year.
But that's the thing. Like, to me, if their offense is scoring points, then if their offense was working, you know, to the point where we thought it could, if they had the receivers to do it, or the play calling to do it at times, was the Jets, did they figure out how to stop teams like the Bills, or were the Bills imperfect? Were the Bills a team offensively capable of beating up on the bad defenses,
yeah,
but when they played an elite defense, they were capable of being stopped?
Well,
to me, I would just want to become an offense that is, you're so good that the Bengals defense and the Jets defense, like, they can do as well as anybody, but you're still going to find your way to 30.
Right. The Bills used to be a team that they would beat you any number of ways, and they then became a team this year that felt a little bit more like Allen might have to go superhuman to beat you.
It felt like there was a blueprint this year. A
little bit. And the Dolphins took their chances. They you know, may not have the personnel to do it the same way. To me, the best example is the Jets. Robert Saleh and the Jets played the Bills well twice. And if they had a quarterback, they might have gone 2-0 against the Bills. And when he left here after they lost that game and said, we'll see them again, he didn't. His team didn't make the playoffs. Their quarterback stinks. But I fully believe that when it comes to defending the Bills, like Belichick still doesn't have the answers. The Bills does not have the answers. But Robert Saleh does. And Lou Anarumo, I think he does have answers for this Bills offense. And that's why a lot of this about the Bills getting another weapon, that's why the coordinator conversation, I think, is never off limits. I'm not telling you they have to change it, but if you don't like the way that it's going, just change. And if Joe Brady leaves and takes an offensive coordinator job with the Chargers or the Jets, maybe it becomes a little tougher because now the most obvious replacement for Dorsey would be gone. And, you know,
do you feel like you then have an in-house candidate?
Yeah, I don't know. I just think they need better answers on offense, and that comes from a skill standpoint and from a scheme standpoint. Josh Allen has been named a finalist for the NFL MVP.
Yep.
Your five candidates: Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, Josh Allen, and Justin Jefferson.
Okay.
Allen is not going to win this.
No. Mahomes is going to win that. Yeah. Not a lot of drama, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
And who's going to win it? Who's the sixth guy there?
The sixth guy there's at one point it would have been Tyreek Hill.
Or Tua.
The sixth guy there. Give me Micah Parsons. Give one defensive player. Can I have one? I got a better one. Give me Sauce Gardner.
I was surprised he wasn't a defensive player of the year nominee.
How could he not be?
Yeah.
Nick Bosa.
Give me one defensive player for MVP. Just one.
Uh-huh.
The NFL should take these votes and take out the fifth place offensive guy and put the top defensive guy in there just to give defense a nod.
Well, are you going to take the non-quarterback away? Because then Justin Jefferson, is he not the fifth guy?
He is the fifth guy. I'm not sure he would have finished fifth.
You think he might finish higher than fifth?
I think he could have finished higher than Burrow. Yeah. Jefferson, I think he might have, he could have finished higher than Allen, too.
Yeah.
He could have finished higher than Hurts.
Quarterback award, though.
It is a quarterback award. I feel like Justin Jefferson being a finalist is a win because it's a non-quarterback. Who's the quarterback that should be in there that's not?
Was there any? Like,
I don't think so.
Nobody. There's no who had an incredible year at quarterback other than the four guys that are mentioned. Like Tua did, but he got hurt. And it tailed off a little bit at the end.
Yeah.
Even when he was in there. Past that, like, did we even have a conversation about a single guy? Lamar Jackson maybe right away at the beginning of the season, but he got hurt.
Yep.
So that didn't happen.
And he started playing really poorly, too.
And he played poorly.
Down the stretch.
So, yeah. No, I think this was it. I don't think there's another quarterback at all.
Max in Rochester. What's up, Max?
Hey, guys. Love the show. I want to preface. I have a little criticism of Dorsey, but I want to say, like, hey, I was one of the people, one of the many banging the drum for him to be the coordinator when Daboll left. And having the number two offense is pretty good. So we got that. But what concerned me was the lack of improvement over the year. It seemed like that he never had like a fingerprint on a game. It just turned into, hey, we're going to run this offense and see if Josh can figure something out. There were multiple times, I haven't heard other people bring it up, but I noticed that there were multiple times this year where you'd see two receivers in the same area. And I'm like, how does that continue to happen? It happened in the Dolphins playoff game too on a completion. But anyway, so that was concerning. But I do think the solution is if we could really invest in a top-notch offensive line, that makes everybody better. It makes Josh better. It makes Gabe Davis better. It gives him more time. So that would be, going forward, that would be my hope. I know it's not sexy, but like to really put as much capital as you can into addressing the offensive line, I think will solve everything. The AFC East is going to be a meat grinder, especially if the Jets can get a quarterback. So anyway, thanks, you guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Max. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to fight you on the idea of the line getting better.
Right. We'll take that. But how much better?
And at the expense of what else?
Right. Am I?
And you know, can I find? Where am I more likely to find a game changer? Is it first round receiver, second round receiver, first round line, third round receiver? You know, there's a lot of different ways to do it. My biggest criticism of the Bills this offseason, this last offseason, was I thought receiver was a need the whole time. The whole time.
And they signed Jameson Crowder.
And on the outside, specifically. They needed someone on the outside.
They didn't do anything there.
No, and their third receiver on the outside was Jake Kumerow.
Right.
So, I mean, it'll be a lot of saying all the sexy answers at receiver as I pound the table in here, but as long as they address it and get better at it and give themselves the option to be great at the position,
yeah,
then that's a win. I can't tell you the first round receiver is going to be better than the third round guy. That doesn't always happen that way. But yeah, on line, I just wouldn't go too far.
They're like your reaction, if they moved up 10 spots to draft a tackle in the first round.
Okay. My first thought is, okay, at least it's not a guard.
Right.
You know, tackle's more important.
Right.
One reason to do that is, and that's the other thing, is do they want to change a lot of their tendencies? They have treated guard on this team.
Oh, like it's
like
it's trying
kicker. To think of something in your life that you just kind of rotate in. And I treat hats. Like, you know.
Sure.
I just wear a different one every day.
Yeah.
And I like them all. But today I'm going to wear this hat.
Yeah.
And next year I'm going to have these guards. Whether that's Roger Saffold and John Feliciano or
Quentin Spain.
Yeah, just
how many different guards have they had? Like Bodker. How many have they had 10 guards start in the last 5 years at different points in time?
Yeah.
The other thing too, though, on O-line.
Just real quick, didn't they draft Cody Ford to be a tackle?
They drafted Cody Ford to be a tackle.
And then he moved him to guard.
Yep. Part of the reason why receiver, though, is above O-line for me is I still feel like this quarterback is as good as anybody in the league at escaping pressure, buying time with his feet, and creating time to throw. That off-structured stuff that happens. There was a play that I think it wasn't yards per pass. Somebody tweeted the play of Allen Saffold getting beat immediately off the line of scrimmage against the Bengals on Sunday. Like the tackle.
Oh man, that's
just
a bad one.
Blows right by him. Watch though the timing of that video. From the point in which Saffold gets beat to when Allen escapes the pocket and finally pulls the ball down to realize I got to run for a yard here. 6 seconds. And the route concepts might not have worked great for this play because there might only be one or two guys on that side of the field, but Allen about 6 seconds. Scrambling to the right,
yeah.
And there's no one to throw to. Like, to me, on some level, this quarterback can manage a poor offensive line as well as any quarterback in football. But you got to have one of two things for me. Because right now, they have a receiving group that does not get open consistently, and an offensive line that gets beat quickly. One of the two. I don't need both, but either give me an O-line that's going to give him all day to throw, and then he can scramble too, and now the receivers have 10 seconds to get open, or, this would be my preference, just get receivers that get open within 3 seconds. And now my O-line, it doesn't matter. How good was the Bengals O-line, really, personnel-wise, on Sunday? It got hidden.
Yeah.
Because Burrow got the ball out in 2.5 seconds.
And because the Bills gave their receivers a 9-yard cushion.
That too. But part of that reason for that cushion is they're intimidated by the skill of Chase, Boyd, and Higgins. And all three of those guys are capable of both getting open quick and will push the coverage back because they are so dangerous.
803-0550. Yeah. Oh, Tom. Hey, whoa, Tom. You there?
Tom's not only got his radio up, he's got it way up.
Hey, Bill, go ahead, Bill.
Listen, my question is, you guys are all over this topic, and it's a great show. Thanks for doing it. Dorsey, should he get credit for off-script plays? It seems like 70% of our offensive plays are Josh running for his life. They like to preach that the Bills have good offensive numbers. They have good offensive numbers because Josh can run for his life and make a play. Should Dorsey get credit for that?
I do wonder.
How many of his plays are on script?
I wonder how much he thinks about that. Nate tweeted this out. It might have been the play that Allen throws it to Gabe Davis on the sideline, the great catch. And from the all 22 look, it's Singletary short and four guys running straight. It's like it's four verticals.
Yep.
And I did think in that moment, is that a play Dorsey calls to think Allen's going to get away from this and I'm going to have four guys working their way back to the football? Or is he doing that just to throw the ball deep? Like, is there any notion ever that he's calling a play of when Allen escapes, when he buys time and gets away, all of these guys are going to be in the right position for an off-structure play?
It's a great question.
Because I have no idea what the answer is.
Bill, it's a great question about off-schedule stuff. Right, like number two offense in the NFL. Yeah, your quarterback's a freak show. You should roll out of bed ninth.
Right. How hard would it be? Where'd they finish? Like third in yards per play this year? How hard is it to not finish in the top five as your quarterback?
Right. I'm not saying absolutely anybody could do it. I'm not saying I could do it or you could do it. But
what would they finish if you were calling plays? Madden plays. Would they be in the top half of the league?
Josh would be his own coordinator.
Right.
You let me know what you want to do. If Joe Brady's the offensive coordinator instead of Dorsey, do they finish second? It's not like they finished 23rd.
Do they finish fourth instead of third?
Maybe. It's not to get after Dorsey. It's just to say the standard should be, like, Brian Daboll having a really good offense and resurrecting Daniel Jones' career is an accomplishment. People didn't think much of Jones. Not everybody could get Daniel Jones to be a very efficient passer and use his legs in such a good way. And Brock Purdy, right? Like Kyle Shanahan, hey, Mr. Not undrafted.
Irrelevant.
Mr. Irrelevant rookie walks in and starts leading the league in yards per play and passing efficiency. Something tells me Kyle Shanahan is pretty darn good at this.
Mm-hmm.
I have Josh Allen. And if most of my plays, especially in the second half of the season, are rolling, these plays where he rolls all the way to the right and then throws it back and hits James Cook, and we're all like, wow, can you believe what Allen does? That goes on their red zone stats, and their red zone stats are consistently pointed to as how Ken Dorsey's doing a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying he's not doing a good job, but when Allen makes a play like that, is that hand up?
Good call. Is any of that on Dorsey?
Is good call, Ken. Is that a good call?
Yeah.
Maybe. I think it's a totally fair question, Bill, that you bring up. So thanks for calling in. Thanks for bringing that up. Because, yeah, sometimes it seems like the Bills' schedule is to get off schedule. Right? Hey, here's the play. You guys go do some stuff. Josh is going to roll out, and that's when the play starts.
Right. The play starts at the five-second mark.
Yeah. Extendo Sports. We'll close things out and get you off to the Extra Point Show with Sal and Joe as well here on WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550. 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
All right, very quickly, I have an NFL stat for you. This came from Scott Spratt, who is with Football Outsiders, mm-hmm. ESPN, Pro Football Focus. Basically, Bucks rookie Rashad White.
Ooh, I like Rashad White.
Pass catcher, right?
Yes.
Route participation. Rashad White's route participation was fifth highest among regular running backs. And this gets to, like, how often were these players involved in a route?
Yep. He, by the way, I think was the first running back picked after James Cook.
Okay.
In this past draft, third round.
So he got 50%.
Yeah.
Jerick McKinnon was number one. DeAndre Swift, Leonard Fournette, mm-hmm. James Conner, Rashad White. Anyway, Singletary is ninth.
Or wow.
Singletary's eighth. It is one of the mysteries of this offense. All these pass-catching backs, and the guy that caught the most was the guy that they didn't think could be a pass-catching back.
Right. And the guy that, I mean, he's not that great at it. Like, yeah. Any efficiency metric you look at for that, like, he's never really been that great at it. I can find this actually in James Cook very quickly. So, do you have the percentages in front, like what Singletary's is, or
yes.
Just say by ranking?
47%.
Okay, here we go. James Cook, route participation rate, 18.8%. That was 69th among all running backs.
Now, route participation, that means?
That means routes run per team pass play.
Okay, so the Bills called 1,000 pass plays. James Cook ran a route on 180.
Yeah.
And Devin Singletary ran a route on 470.
Yes. Not great.
No, nearly three times as many.
Who leads them in routes next year, running back?
I mean,
is Hines the answer?
I can't even listen to Hines until they restructure him. Yeah. They could save $5 million by,
I mean,
cutting Nyheim Hines.
But they're not going to cut him the way Bean sounded yesterday, right?
Like,
Bean mentioned him the first name they got to about weapons and, like, talking about next year. Like, Hines was the go-to.
It's got to be a restructure.
It's got to be a restructure. You're right.
They can save $5 million.
Yeah, they can't pay him more than Austin Ekeler.
No. And Singletary can't come back because his market value is $5 million.
Right. The NHL announced their skills contest for All-Star Weekend.
Okay.
Did you see this? A lot of the normal ones. Like Tage Thompson maybe will participate in, like, hardest shot. You got accuracy. You got shootout.
What about tallest player? Is there a competition for that?
I don't see that. He probably would do pretty well at that. Fastest skater, of course. Also, new event this year. In Florida, remember. Pitch and puck. Using a combination of hockey and golf shots, six NHL All-Stars will play a par 4 course featuring an island green. Lowest score wins the competition. If there's a tie, a longest drive will determine the winner. They did not describe, though, what a combination of hockey and golf shots means.
Yeah.
Like, are they going to play the golf course with hockey sticks?
That is a good question. Ooh, okay.
Like, are they going to take slap shots off the tee?
I think you wouldn't take a slap shot. I think you would be more likely to, yeah, set somebody up on a tee, and then how far could an NHL player rifle, like, your clearing attempt?
Yeah.
You could get that, what?
What, 100 yards?
I think so. Neighborhood, maybe even more, if you really wanted to.
Uh-huh.
How far could a guy rip it? Or, sure, if it's an elevated, this should be the entire All-Star game, by the way. I'm going to watch this.
Just the golf?
Yes.
Yeah.
More celebrity golf on TV would be much better.
Yeah.
It is golf season.
It is. We're both golfing today.
We're both playing golf
today. As it snows outside for the third consecutive hour.
I'll consider it a success if I don't get hurt. My first golf swing since October. I walk around the building and I'm sore tight from winter. So if I don't get hurt, it's a win. Extra Point Show, Sal and Joe on the way here on WGR.